Don't that drive you crazy, always leaving you hanging on the meat hook like that? Now then, introduce us.
I'm Justin Sowler.
Yes, yes he is.
This is Ken Hanke.
No, I'm Ken Hanke.
I said this okay, is Ken Hanke. Okay.
And we're Elitist Bastards. Mm-hmm. And we are coming to you, propping up the bar in the Cinema Lounge.
Yes, at the Carolina Asheville,
yes.
Andersonville Road.
Yes, where it is raining outside, but luckily not inside.
Quite convenient.
I think it's very convenient, in fact. And we are collectively Elitist Bastards with an S. And singularly, we're just an elitist bastard. I think I'm probably more seasoned as a bastard than he is, but he's learning.
Means he's old.
That's true. And in any case, we have been to the movies.
Someone insulted you.
And I'll insult you in a minute. And I guess we'll tell you about it, if you care for that sort of thing. So,
What
was your mainstream movie this week?
No Strings Attached.
Oh, yes, the one that you actually chose to go see.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And
you willfully went to see an Ashton Kutcher movie.
That Ken was originally going to. Ken really wanted to see this Ivan Reitman film.
I really wanted to see it because it was shorter than the one I was going to and it started earlier.
Right.
But that's neither here nor there. I'm glad that I saw the one that I saw.
Well,
so
good. I thought you would. I did it for you. He wasn't thinking.
Oh.
Wasn't in his right mind.
I have it. On the highest.
I'm sure you have it.
The highest ecclesiastical authority.
Uh-huh.
That one goes to hell for lying.
I was merely stating an opinion.
Yes. No.
A professional opinion.
No. You did it for me?
No.
Yes, exactly.
Maybe a little bit.
All right. Go ahead with your taradiddle.
When you put it like that. it's an Ivan Reitman picture. It stars Ashton Kutcher, which right there are two things.
That's two strikes.
Yes. There's Natalie Portman in what could have been a very Norbit-like film.
What, she wears a fat suit?
No, more like that she's getting Oscar buzz. Did she get nominated?
Yes. Okay. Yes, she did get nominated.
Okay. She gets nominated and then immediately is in a horrible movie. But it turns out the movie's not horrible. It's just sort of...
not good.
I wouldn't even say it's not good. I wouldn't say it's good. It's there. I was amazed that I could spend an hour and a half not detesting Ashton Kutcher, and I think this is the most palatable he's ever been.
Were you in pleasant company when you saw this?
Yes, but at the same time, I was like, he's not that obnoxious. No.
Oh, okay.
Right. Matinee Ken.
Hey,
I don't know
in theaters before. I know what goes on at matinees.
Were you doing them?
No. Oh. I still want to know about that jar of hand cream that we found after a showing of The Princess Diaries. Or maybe I don't.
I want to know about the pack of roast beef I found in a theater once. No bread, no mayonnaise, a pack of roast beef that was open. That's much more confounding.
But of course not. The mayonnaise would have been messy.
I'm not sure what you're getting at.
Well, I mean, the roast beef I can understand. If they'd had mayonnaise with them, I'd really question it. What about those middle-aged, bald-headed men who went to see that Olsen Twins movie?
Yeah. You watched it. I don't know. You tell me.
I had no choice.
Neither did they.
They had a compulsion. I had a job. There is a small difference. Anyway, continue. Or is that all you have to say about this movie?
It's not as bad as you might expect.
You know?
Though it's...
I'm not going to go see it.
I'm not saying you should
go
see it. Did I ever say, Ken, you should go watch this?
Not yet.
No.
Okay.
Though you should, I think.
No, I'm not going
to.
No,
you should.
I won't.
Just because you're going to be a smartass to me, I think you should watch it. I think you'll enjoy it, honestly, from the bottom of my heart.
No, I know he's lying. All right.
You should actually, you should watch it just... It's worth it for the...
I'm not going to watch
this.
No,
it's worth it for his line, his big romantic, his equivalent of love means never saying you're sorry. It has one of those lines in it. Or you had me at hello. And I'm pretty sure they came up with this line and wrote a movie around it. It's that bad. It's like, ugh.
No, that's okay. You can tell me the line at some future point.
I'm never going to tell
you. No.
I'm just going to mention it.
Whatever.
Until the point that you watch the movie.
All right. Well.
What did you watch, Ken?
Well, let's see. Actually, I've seen three of the titles that we're discussing this week. I just didn't review one of them.
Right.
What did I watch? A haze has crept over my mind. No. Well, I watched Blue Valentine, which actually opens this Friday.
Right. Should you open a vein afterwards?
You know, you kind of feel like it. This is we appear to be in the depressive season of motion pictures. Almost everything left to come out from 2010 is depressing. Believe me, if you went to see all of these movies that are still creeping down the pike towards us, and they're not necessarily bad movies, but if you were to see them over the space of a couple days, you would be buying razor blades. And Blue
You'd feel
Valentine.
Like shaving, is what he said.
Yes, you would. You would feel like shaving. In any case.
Well, most of the people in these movies are scruffy.
They're scruffy.
So maybe
these shave. People do need to shave. Perhaps not Michelle Williams. I don't know.
Did they show that much of her?
That fetching little. No, they don't. And that's the other thing. This is the movie that, it almost got an NC-17 for these explicit sex scenes. My God. These scenes aren't explicit. Well, they're explicit to the degree that, hey, you know, they're fucking big deal. I kind of figured that. But as far as...
Ken's very intuitive.
Seeing anything? Yeah, I am. Seeing it? You don't see anything. Good Lord, if these people had been rating movies back in the 70s, there'd be a plethora of X-rated movies running around. As opposed to a bunch of things that used to get an R. But no, not now. So we made a big issue out of this. Unless the issue was manufactured to draw attention to the film, and that wouldn't particularly surprise me. It's the story of a disintegration of a marriage of two people I didn't really care much about. It's extremely well done, except for the writing, which is non-existent, because it appears to have been one of those, let's just give you a scene and you improvise it. And that is as uninteresting as it sounds. It's people making up stuff to say that's as bland as real life. On the other hand, I will have to say that by the end of it, despite the fact that I didn't, on the surface, care about these people at all, I found it had a kind of emotional kick to it, and I'm not even sure why. So I don't not recommend the film, it's just that I don't highly recommend the film.
I haven't seen it, I guess.
I wasn't expecting you to say anything about it.
I thought it was a sequel to My Bloody Valentine.
No. That's okay, Neil keeps calling it Blue Velvet. He thinks it's something else.
So maybe it's a mix between My Bloody Valentine and Blue Velvet.
Well, it could well be. It isn't in any case, but it's going to have a great deal of appeal right now simply by virtue of the fact that Michelle Williams did get an Oscar nomination for Best Actress for it. That's going to boost its stock considerably for a while. It's just not what you'd call a crowd pleaser. And what else did you see?
Well, we both saw.
What did you review?
Tiny Furniture.
Yes.
Which I'm ambivalent about and you hate. So.
Well, the funny thing is when I first saw it, I didn't hate it. And the further away I got from it, the more I hated this movie.
Right.
I think it was seeing the poster every time I came into this building. You know, this poster of this vaguely unattractive girl with her head on the floor and toy furniture in front of her. And in giant letters across this poster, Aura would like you to know she's having a very, very hard time. Fuck Aura. Who cares about Aura? She has no personality, limited brains, no ambition that I can tell. And she lives off her mother in some fabulously expensive two-floor New York City apartment. I should have such problems.
I can't argue that.
Okay.
I just can't get worked up about it.
I can because I am sick of 20-something navel-gazing ennui.
Well, you never give me these movies to watch, so I'm not used to them.
You can have everyone that comes down
Fine.
The pike now. Because I don't ever want to see another one of these mumblecore crap fests. I give her credit for owning a tripod. And apparently not being afraid to use it.
And writing a script, it seems.
Yes, I know, but you likened it to Woody Allen.
It is. It's not good Woody Allen, but it's...
It is to Woody Allen... as a broken pogo stick is to a Rolls Royce.
I'm saying that's what... What else is it influenced by? Other
Mumblecore.
Than what else is it supposed to be other than Woody Allen?
I don't know, but it's not
it's
Woody...
Obvious.
It's not funny Woody Allen.
It's
not penetrating
it's her trying
Woody Allen.
To be. I'm not saying it was good Woody Allen. I'm saying that's what she was trying to do.
Oh, okay. Well, she failed.
I'm not saying she didn't.
Anyway, the hipster crowd will eat it up.
Oh, they might not.
No, they won't. All
what is the
them.
Hipster crowd?
I am not sure. Well, you could put it into an age perspective.
Well, I think it's understandable to an extent. Though it is too much delving into her malaise and her ennui. And it's, I was fine with the movie to an extent, and I guess to a point about halfway through, which is probably sooner for you than it was for me. It's like, oh, I've got another 45 minutes of this.
It was definitely sooner for me than it was for you. But at the same time, the film, I liked the film slightly better whenever her friend was on screen.
Who can actually act.
Yeah, which Lena Dunham cannot act. I guess she thinks that being her does not require acting. She's wrong. She is wrong about so many things.
She's getting an HBO series. Maybe that'll keep her from making movies.
Well, that has the advantage of I don't have HBO. And it's yet another reason not to have HBO. Well, The Way Back turns out to be a surprisingly good film, and it is the complete antithesis of what you think of these days for an independent film. The characters mostly aren't 20-something. Well, they might be. Some of them are 20-something, and some of them are younger than that. But they don't have ennui. They've got an actual problem. And the movie is actually looks like a movie all the way through. And it's about something other than somebody's fucking navel. So, yes, I was pleasantly surprised by this movie, which is didn't sound all that hot. I mean, you know, if I ask you, hey, you want to go see a movie about some people that break out of a Soviet labor camp and travel 4,000 miles to get to India and freedom? Are you going to say, I'm down with that? Well, it turns out that it is a lot more interesting than that might sound on the surface, and a lot less dreary than that might sound on the surface. It may be a little bit too long. I think it could have probably lost about 10 minutes and would have been in its favor, but, you know, it wasn't badly overlong. It's very human. It's something you can relate to. You don't have to be in a labor camp, I don't believe.
It might help, though.
It might help. So if you've been in a labor camp, this is definitely your movie, especially a Soviet labor camp in 1940. And if you were in a Soviet labor camp in 1940, you're even older than I am. But no, I really do. I do recommend.
They've been in a labor camp, Ken. Why would you be such a dick to those people?
Because it's from the safety of this podcast, okay. And I can be. Aside from which, I really don't think there's
a good chance of. I mean, we've got some Film Society members.
Some Film Society members were not in labor camps in the Soviet.
One of them might have been, and you just ran them off. How dare you?
It's beautiful. And the film's made by Peter Weir. This is an actual, honest-to-God filmmaker who knows something about how to make a movie. Unfortunately, he doesn't get to make many these days. I mean, it's been four years, I guess, since Master and Commander came out, and that wasn't really that didn't feel like a Peter Weir film. This feels like something Peter Weir would make. That just felt like a glossy, big-budget, okay movie. This, on the other hand, actually feels like a personal work, and I think that very much is in his favor.
So this Thursday at the Cinema Lounge, the Carolina Asheville, 8 p.m.
We have the Thursday horror picture shows. It's funny how that works out, and I noted that earlier today, that these Thursday horror picture shows always seem to be on Thursdays. How do you account for that?
Well, when we put them on Thursdays, Thursday in the title of it, I guess.
That's probably true. In any case, we are showing Wes Craven's classic film, the original A Nightmare on Elm Street.
Right.
And especially...
Which is this a film that you find people take seriously? Or do they just think of it as...
I don't know. I mean, you know, and they should take it seriously because it really has nothing... Other than the Freddy character and a little bit of plot stuff, it has very little relation to the sequels.
Well, not just that, but I always feel like growing up it was always lumped in with Friday the 13th.
Yeah, but you know, it's just like I pointed out in the review, it's interesting that really, you know, that whole run of movies from that period, only the Nightmare on Elm Street films and Don Mancini's Chucky films have a distinctive villain. I mean, you could, you know, change the masks on Jason and Michael Myers, and they're the same person. You can pretty much do the same thing with Leatherface. There's no character there. Freddy is an
Candyman.
Actual character.
Huh? Candyman.
Well, yeah, there's Candyman. That's only he only lasted for a couple pictures, though. So, you know, it was Hook.
Yeah. Anyway, Freddy. What about him? He's distinctive.
He's distinctive. I mean, you know, he has a personality. There's a character there. He does kind of degenerate into a stand-up maniac, joke-spouting character as the films go on. And I think people forget that. The first one, he doesn't really have jokey lines. I mean, the first one is really intensely creepy, and it also was made for, like, no money.
Right. I mean, what separates it from, I think, this movie from a lot of the stuff coming out around that time is that as filmmaking, it's pretty imaginative. And just the way it's all solid effects.
Yeah, it's also but it also, and they're all cheap effects too, but they all look good.
Yeah, it works.
Yeah,
You can always tell like what the trick is, but
for sure.
But there's something solid there. It's not CGI.
But sometimes you didn't really get the feeling that you were looking at something that, you know, you didn't really, when it first came out, you didn't really try to take how it was done apart.
Uh-huh.
The idea of this thing pushing through the wall and leaning over somebody in bed was just scary. You didn't go, oh, that's a latex wall. It didn't occur to you to do that.
Or blood coming out of the bed.
Yeah, well, you know.
Which is obviously just, it's upside down, but...
Well, yeah, but...
It looks neat.
It looks really cool, actually. You know, and... but it is also, like I said in the review, to me, I think some of the stuff that really sticks with you are these little...
Right.
Little touch things like the feather that comes out of her dream when we first realize that something can come out of the dream, when she brings the hat out of the dream. There are a few things to me that are creepier than that body bag going down the school hallway.
What about Freddy's convertible? Is that not creepy?
It's not. I find it very clever. I you know, like most everybody, I don't really like that final scene.
Right.
But the fact that, but even that, I think that part of it is clever, that the convertible, you know, well, right. I won't say. Just watch the movie and you can see what I'm talking about. Anyway, we're showing it. Come and see it. And so long as it doesn't snow, I'll be here too. The movie's here.
I've actually seen
not.
This one, so I can introduce it.
That's true, so that would be good. I was really afraid he was going to have to introduce the movie tonight. I can see it now. Ken programmed this movie.
It's old.
It stars somebody named Deanna Durbin, whoever that is. I'll start it. Well, this coming Tuesday, which is February 1st, not February 2nd, as I erroneously thought originally, and as it says in the paper. But in any case, on Tuesday, we have our snow makeup day for Preston Sturges' Unfaithfully Yours, which we did you out of because of the snow. Now, all we are hoping is that
it doesn't snow again,
so that we can actually show it this time. Once again, it is not dependent on me getting here because Justin has the movie and he is somewhat less apt to get snowed in and more apt to get all pissy and butch about it and drive through things I won't even attempt due to cabin fever than I am. I'll just take a nap. But in any case, that's what we're showing. And this Friday night, we should mention, especially because it's somewhat incorrect in the paper, that the Action Fest folks are having a free screening of the movie Black Death, which stars Sean Bean from the Lord of the Rings movies and David Warner. And if you don't know who David Warner is, that's your fault. And Carice Van Houten, who is the woman from Black Book. And the deal with this is kind of like to get you started and geared up for this year's Action Fest, which looks to be about a million times better than last year's Action Fest. You have to go to either Orbit DVD, TVI, Harvest Records, Pastime,
and Comic Envy.
Comic Envy. Any one of those stores, and you say the secret way, and the duck drops down, you get $50. No, you say the secret word, and the secret word is Action Fest 2011, and they will give you a pair of tickets to this showing at 10 o'clock on Friday night at the Carolina Asheville.
It should be noted that they're going to be giving out more tickets than there are seats, so...
Ah, well...
So if you want to get in, you should get here early, just to be safe.
It's a possibility that it will run out, but I...
Well, if you're skittish about these things,
yes.
You know, some people are nervous about their free stuff. So.
Well, that's true, yes. And I
want everyone to be warned.
Okay.
So...
You warned them.
Okay. Because I will be working that night.
Oh, even better, so we know who to come complain to.
You're not going to be there, Ken.
You're damn right I'm not going to be there. The Upcomers.
What is upcoming?
Blue Valentine and Tiny Furniture. And hopefully not my lunch.
And then The Mechanic.
The Mechanic with Jason Statham.
Who I like a lot.
Well, I'm glad you do. I don't mind Jason Statham. The film is probably fine. The film's existence is worth it to me just to watch these Charles Bronson fanatics on the IMDb froth at the mouth about this desecration of remaking this Michael Winner classic Charles Bronson movie with Jason Statham. Oh, come on. Jason Statham is, you know, several times the actor Charles Bronson ever was on his best day, and now they're going to come after me.
I'm sure they're all listening to this.
They are. Yes, they are, you know.
Charles Bronson. We have a big Charles Bronson.
My favorite
was
the guy who tried to say, "There you are," and he said, "They you are." And you shouldn't build yourself up for this, even if you are a Jason Statham fan. Build, B-I-L-L-E-D. This should tell you something. In any case, it opens on Friday, as does The Rite, which is an exorcism movie, unfortunately rated PG-13, starring some Brit-Irish TV actor I've never heard of, Colin O'Donoghue.
Oh,
you know, I never heard of him either. But it also has Anthony Hopkins. It's got Ciaran Hinds. It's got Toby Jones, Rutger Hauer. Alice Braga. Granted, she's never been in anything as good as City of God again, but still, you know, she's not a deplorable actress. I mean, so they've got him some decent support, this young matinee idol-looking gentleman, but it's an exorcism story. I mean, that could go any way you want to. And of course, it's based on true events, which, so is Texas Chainsaw Massacre, except it didn't take place in Texas. It wasn't a massacre and had nothing to do with chainsaws. So, you know, quibbly details. So, in any case, this is apparently, I guess, is this our first horror film of the year? I guess it is.
I think so.
Well, Season of the Witch.
How does that count?
It gets zombified ninja monks. What? How can that not count as a horror film?
No, I didn't see it.
Okay. Well, it's not my fault. You could have.
I was working when you watched it.
You could have watched it at some other time.
Yes, because your review made a sterling
endorsement. Bumble Puppy. In any case, that's what's opening. Have you had enough?
Yes.
Okay, I've had enough.
Okay.
You
sign
a
her off,
Ken. There's a little can here, an 8-ounce Nuff. You can have enough.
I'm not even going to say anything after that.
You shouldn't.
All right, so tell the people what they want to hear.
We're leaving. That's what they want to hear.
Okay.
No, what they want to hear is that I'm Ken Hankey, and he, who is no longer speaking, he's eating his Nuff. His 8-ounce Nuff is Justin Souther, and we are the movie critics for the Mountain Express, who are the fine folks who make this podcast possible, and who...
Every single one of them make it possible.
Every single one, yes. They all have
Bloods
a hand or some body part in this. And speaking of some body part, we are produced by the masterful, infallible Steve Schanefeld,
and
who is waiting for me to say something else,
leaving.
And I will, and it is goodbye.